For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back! At the buzzer!
Right here on 960theref.com.
Greetings, 960 The Ref listeners. Sam Franco, Chris Brame back with another edition of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. I feel like a broken record, but I'm going to say it again. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. It makes it much easier for you to get this podcast whenever we upload one every week. So be sure to subscribe on iTunes. You just search for the Crossover Podcast on iTunes, and you'll see our logo. And it says our names right there on it. So it's there's a couple of different podcasts that have a name similar to that on iTunes.
Should we be suing?
I'm not sure. I don't know if we even have the trademark on this. But right. So let's just keep that quiet between us. But yes, you can find us on iTunes pretty easily that way. And subscribe and you'll get all our episodes. Anyway, plenty to get to on this edition of the Crossover. We'll talk Georgia. Got to talk U.S. soccer and the monumental failure of not qualifying for the World Cup. And we'll also touch on this weekend's Falcons and Dolphins matchup, which the Falcons should win pretty comfortably because the Dolphins have been pretty poor.
They also don't have an offensive line coach currently.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Since theirs was caught on a video snorting cocaine.
He's just a line coach.
Yeah, right? That's right.
He's a lines coach.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll get into that here in a little bit. But first and foremost, Georgia continues to just take care of business, going up to Nashville and pounding Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt did actually score 14 points. Granted, seven of them were kind of gifted when Jacob Eason got sacked and fumbled, and Vanderbilt was easily able to score after that. But overall, Georgia just keeps on rolling.
But the only disappointment I had from that game was the brief – defensive lapse at the end of the first half that led Vandy to score, you know, really their only legitimate touchdown
right.
of the game. And because you start to think, like, Georgia was on a verge of, I mean, what was the consecutive quarter streak without allowing a touchdown? It had been two games, almost two
yeah.
and a half games mm-hmm. Georgia was working on without giving up a touchdown. I guess that was nine quarters. And they were looking to make it a 10th until Vandy got in. But, I mean, that was the only real letdown there. And, I mean, on the subject of letdowns, expecting that, you know, Georgia's kind of, you feel like, due for one. And they just haven't. It's been relentless, and it's a great feeling. This is the kind of team that we've been hoping that Georgia would have, one that just margin of victory, you crush everybody, you don't leave yourself vulnerable to an upset. And now I feel like, as a Georgia fan, we can show up to this game Saturday night with no worries about Missouri coming here and springing an upset with what this team's been doing so far.
Oh, and Missouri has been abysmal in a number of different aspects in terms of their team and in terms of the three different phases of the game. So Georgia should be able to win this comfortably. And it's kind of like what you were saying there. Kirby Smart speaks in these sayings, you know, these cliches, attack the day, keep chopping wood, all that stuff. And a lot of people, you know, think that that's, you know, coach speak or whatever, but it works. And he's gotten this team and every player on this team to buy into that message of the simple message of focus on the task at hand. Humility's only a week away. You know, keep chopping wood. And this team has bought into all that. And really that kind of next man up mentality. Georgia against Vanderbilt was without Trenton Thompson, Reggie Carter, and, of course, Natrez Patrick, who got arrested on the defensive side of the ball. And you wouldn't have been able to tell. If you didn't know those guys' numbers and didn't know that they were on or off the field, you wouldn't have been able to tell. The guys that stepped in played very, very well.
Yeah, especially a couple guys at linebacker, Jawan Taylor,
mm-hmm.
Monty Rice has looked solid, too. So it really was. It was a next-man-up type of thing, and I feel like Georgia's got another gimme coming up this weekend, and then you've got the off week, but 7-0 heading into what will be I think, a tough final month of the season between having to play the Gators, Auburn, South Carolina sandwiched in between that, and then having that Kentucky game sandwiched in between Auburn and Georgia Tech. So some of the heavier lifting of the season will be done. I think Georgia's played two good teams so far, and that's it. Notre Dame, and I still think Mississippi State is a solid bunch. I mean, keep in mind right now, their only two losses are on the road to Georgia and Auburn, who I believe have, you know, emerged as two of the better teams in the SEC and certainly on the defensive side. But, you know, I think that's why it's so key that Georgia has blown, especially Tennessee and Vandy, out in the last 2 weeks. Because it'd be one thing, like, you know, Tennessee and Vandy aren't very good, and if Georgia was beating them by, like, 4 points, 7 points, something like that. But to roll up the margins of victory that the Dogs have the last three games, I think is a pretty good sign that that Georgia's a really good team. And, again, it also leads us into playing Missouri's terrible.
They're awful.
And I think that's the key, is there's not a sense that, well, we still have to be on guard now this weekend playing a bad team. With what we've seen the last three games, Georgia ain't losing Saturday night.
I mean, Vanderbilt might want to try and shore up their run defense. They gave up 496 yards rushing to Alabama and another 423 to Georgia.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing when you – to just go into last Saturday's game, I mean, expecting that the focus was no way it could be the same. You're kicking off at 11 a.m., mm-hmm. and even though the stadium was – there was more red in that than, you know, Vandy colors.
Yeah, it was 75%, it looked like.
Yeah, I mean, it was
maybe
still a pretty
more
dead atmosphere.
It was.
But the one thing that 'll help you overcome, you know, just maybe being a little flat – is being able just to power run left, power run right,
yep,
power run left, and power run right. And if that's all you got to do, then that's going to take care of it.
And quite frankly, the Dogs should be able to do that this weekend against a, again, bad Missouri team. And looking forward, I don't see why they shouldn't be able to do it in a lot of their games.
The fewest points Missouri's given up this year is 31. So,
yeah.
And some people might argue that they've got an offense you got to be worried about. They scored 3 points at home against Purdue. They scored, 13 against South Carolina and 14 against Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they scored a lot of points against Southwest Missouri State, and they did have a good game last week against Kentucky. But against Auburn, against Purdue, South Carolina, and by the way, only Auburn is even comparable to Georgia. I mean, look at their offensive numbers in that game. I mean, this is a team that lost 35-3 at home to, mm-hmm, Purdue. I mean, there's no reason any Georgia fan should even cross our minds that Georgia's going to lose Saturday.
Well, and you can look, too, just keeping it going, talking about how Georgia's been very good running the football. I mean, Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, that might have been the best sign from the Vanderbilt game, is both of them getting back to what you expect out of them. You know, Chubb 138, Sony 150 on the ground, three touchdowns between them. So, you know, look at Florida, for example. Florida gave up 215 yards rushing to Michigan. They gave up 183 to Tennessee. They gave up 186 to Kentucky. They gave up 120 to Kentucky. And they gave up to LSU 216. So Georgia should be able to run the ball on them as well.
Yeah. And it was, you know, the yards per carry Saturday was absurd. What was Georgia end up with, like 7.5? Somewhere close to
7.8.
Okay, yeah. Basically 8 yards per carry. That's just nuts.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, not even Navy does that.
No, not that. Those are like Georgia Tech, like, you know, those kind of numbers of teams that are trying to do that. Exactly. So it's pretty wild what the Dogs have been able to do and how consistent they've been. And like you said a second ago, there's no reason to think Georgia's not going to be able to do the same stuff against Missouri, because Missouri might be, in this stretch Georgia's had here with Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Vandy, Missouri might be worse than all three of those.
Oh, they're terrible. They're the worst team in the SEC, and they put up a decent fight Saturday night against Kentucky, but that was Missouri. They were coming off a bye, so, you know, they had that. They had some time to prepare, but now you're getting a Missouri team that's going to be on back-to-back travel. They're going from Lexington, Kentucky, back home, and then coming to Athens to face, I mean, yeah, they put up a nice fight against Kentucky, but Georgia's way better than Kentucky. So, it comes back to this. Missouri lost at home to Purdue 35-3.
Mm-hmm.
They, You know, in no way, shape, or form are they a threat to Georgia Saturday. And with what Georgia's done the last 3 weeks, I think the team has earned the benefit of the doubt from all the fans.
And it's homecoming. It's a night game. I mean, this should be a raucous environment. So, yeah, I think all of the ingredients are there for Georgia to really just dominate and easily handle Missouri. And I totally agree with you. This is something I've been preaching now for the past couple of weeks, ever since Georgia blew out Mississippi State. This isn't the same Georgia team that these, you know, Munson-era fans are used to. This team is going out there destroying teams, not playing sloppy, fundamentally sound football, not missing tackles, not having stupid special teams mistakes. This team is doing everything right now, so why would you be nervous? And again, I know that things have happened in Jacksonville over the years that make you nervous. Things that have happened against Georgia Tech, and it's like, well, you got to be cautiously optimistic. Why? This team isn't being cautiously optimistic. They have that swagger and that confidence that Coach Smart and this staff has instilled in them. That should bleed through to the fan base.
It should. I mean, this is the type of team that we've been, you know, for years, we've been saying Georgia needed to be. It's like you look at a program like Alabama, and when you blow everyone out, mm-hmm. and like, you know, even Saturday, Georgia had some penalties in there. But even in those little moments where you do get maybe a little sloppy, it just doesn't matter. And, you know, even this year when the offense has turned the ball over, the defense has been so good that none of it has mattered. But, yeah, I mean, when you get into a game and you just are crushing teams, it does two things. One, it just doesn't leave you vulnerable in that game to possibly get upset where you've got the underdog hanging around. And I think, two, moving forward, whoever you're playing in the future no longer is looking at you as a potential notch in their belt. Where you've got, like, a Kentucky or a Vanderbilt, or in this case, a Missouri, and they're like, boy, we've had a tough season, but we got a chance. We can go to Athens and win because those guys are always – barely beating teams, but not this team this year. And you know, I think the credit belongs to, you got guys like Chubb, Michelle, Lorenzo Carter, those seniors that decided to come back to school. They didn't decide to come back to go 7-5.
No, they're on a mission.
Yes,
absolutely, and they want to win. And why are Alabama fans annoying? Because they can back up all that crap they talk, like all the smack they talk to you. If you're a Georgia fan, if you're an Auburn fan, if you're an LSU fan, why can Alabama continue to do that, and why can those fans continue to be confident and cocky? Because they win. And that's the thing. They have gotten that from the team winning. So now that Georgia's kind of doing that, Georgia's fan base, you know, be cocky, man. Be a little arrogant.
I don't even think it's cockiness. I think it's finally confidence.
Yeah.
Because my partner in the afternoon, Jeff, always says,
he's a nervous wreck.
Be confident, not cocky. And I'm like, well, in this case, I am confident.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm confident in Georgia that you know, we're a 30-point favorite Saturday. Missouri lost at home to Purdue 35-3, and we haven't gone out the last 3 weeks and won by field goals and touchdowns. We've won by 28, 41, and what did the final end up being?
45-14.
45-14, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just, I'm confident. There's no way Georgia's losing to Missouri Saturday night.
Georgia will beat Missouri. Georgia will beat Florida. Georgia will beat South Carolina, and Georgia will beat Kentucky. Those are four.
You skipped a game.
Well, Auburn is going to be a very tough game.
Right.
I'm not. That's the thing. Auburn's the only team to Tech, because Tech can run the football, and Tech isn't a bad team. I feel like Auburn and Tech are easily better football teams than the teams that we have left on the schedule. Maybe Tech and Florida are somewhat similar. But that's the thing. Tech should have beaten Tennessee. I mean, they got, you know, very unlucky with that fumble by J.J. Green.
Yeah.
So,
and Florida should have lost to Kentucky.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel like Auburn is easily the best team left on the schedule. But those games that I mentioned, those four, Georgia's going to win those games.
I agree with you. I'm not ready to go to Jacksonville yet and just be, you know, chest out, we're going to win the game. But I do feel like that's definitely one circle. Talking about guys like Chubb and Michelle, they didn't come back to school to lose to the Gators again. And they didn't come back to school to lose to Tech again.
They came to each rush for like $150 and 2 touchdowns against Florida.
Right.
This could be the revenge game for that year that Florida beat Georgia and all they did was run off tackle left and off tackle right.
Well, sure.
That's what Georgia could do.
Now, here's like one little, you know, being a Georgia fan that still you have in the back of your mind. Muschamp's second year, which was his good year at Florida, they lost one game. That was in the cocktail party.
That's right.
We upset them. So now, let's not have where it's the roles are reversed. We're having that year in Kirby's second year, and then we get upset by an inferior Florida team.
Ugh, I don't even want to think about that, and I'm not going to because I'm feeling confident. I'm feeling very good about this Georgia squad.
No, I want to go down there. I'm like, we haven't blown them out since 97. I mean, we've barely beaten them since 97, but our biggest win is, what, 12? We beat them by 12, and
that was really 42-30 in 2012.
In 7.
No, that's 2007. That's right.
And that wasn't a blowout because we didn't have a bigger than a one possession lead in that game until our last possession of the game. I mean, it was pretty much nip and tuck, even though we ended up winning by double digits.
And then we all remember the Georgia wins in, what, 11, 12, and 13 were all pretty tight.
They were tight, yeah. there were games we lose if Jarvis Jones never transferred here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Georgia had to have, what, like a game, like, killing drive in 2013 that lasted like the entire fourth quarter.
Yeah, and then in 12 he strips
Jarvis Jones knocked the ball out of Reed's hand on the goal line.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a nervous game, but yeah, this is one where you feel confident and you want Georgia to go there and just obliterate them. That'd be nice. All right, speaking of obliterate, that's what U.S. soccer needs to do right now to all the people that work for them. Because they failed to qualify for the World Cup by losing to Trinidad and Tobago.
And all they needed to do was draw.
That's right. Yeah. All they needed was a draw. They could not get that. And what happened with Honduras beating Mexico, with Panama beating Costa Rica, and the USA losing to Trinidad, according to ESPN, that had a 3% chance of happening.
Well, yeah, there was a parlay would have paid like, it was like 40-1 or something.
Yeah.
Had you basically done all those three to win. Now, Mexico, I think there's no doubt in my mind they lost on purpose.
Which is crazy because the USA in the last World Cup cycle won a meaningless game against Panama, scored like very late in the game, and that's the only reason Mexico went to the World Cup.
Sure, but in the last year or so, I think Mexicans...
No, this is Donald Trump's fault.
Yes.
I 100%
Mexicans
will say that.
Mexicans have been given plenty of reason to not like Americans.
And I'm not trying to get political on here. I'm just saying, Mexico laid down for Honduras.
There was an own goal.
Yes,
they had an own
and
goal.
And it hit the keeper in the face.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I just said they had an own goal.
It bounced off the keeper's face into like the goal.
Oh, my God.
It's awful. If you haven't seen it, you got to look it up. It is brutal.
Wow.
But, no, I'm fully convinced that Mexico just laid down.
They laid down. I don't know about Costa Rica, who ended up losing
Panama scored a goal that wasn't a goal. And that kind of screwed the United States out of the World Cup. The ball never crossed the line, but the ref called it a goal.
So what nationality is the ref?
I don't know.
Is he Mexican?
Ooh, if he is, I'm saying – there's some stuff going down here. Not trying to get political.
But still, the bigger issue is the U.S. still barely got in, no matter how that stuff played out, that it was still coming down to, like...
the last day.
Yeah,
with,
like Panama getting a late goal against Costa Rica. Like, that should have mattered.
But still, I mean, this is a complete embarrassment. I think striker Jozy Altidore said it after the game, and this is a cliche when something like this happens. Everybody needs to look at themselves in the mirror. But he's right. I mean, and I'm not just talking about the players. I'm talking about the coaches. I'm talking about the president, Sunil Gulati, of the U.S. Soccer Federation. Many people are calling for that guy to get out, and I think he should. This is a complete failure from the top down.
Well, I don't follow it that closely, but when the U.S. got rid of Jurgen Klinsmann, I even as someone that like barely pays attention to it, I had to ask myself, why are they rehiring that guy Bruce Arena?
Yeah, and Bruce Arena had some success as the U.S. manager, but the way that Jurgen Klinsmann had built things, you know, Bruce Arena kind of just took some of that and went the other way, and it kind of messed some things up. But, you know, I just think that, you know, looking back on it, the results that Jurgen Klinsmann was getting weren't great, but it certainly seemed like a panic move to fire him, and Bruce Arena didn't do much better. And now he's going to be gone, and the U.S. is going to bring in someone else to try and get 2022, you know, into the World Cup that way. But, I mean, for the U.S. to miss the last two Olympics and now miss a World Cup, I mean, it looks like the national program has just taken a huge step backwards, despite possibly having the greatest U.S.-born player or the greatest player to play for the U.S. ever in Christian Pulisic. And he's going to miss a World Cup in his prime, which is a shame because he could have chosen to play for, I think, Serbia, you know, when because his parents, you know,
right,
the nationality. Kid's only 19 years old, and he's going to miss a World Cup at 20. I mean, granted, 24, I guess, will be how old he is at the next World Cup, so he'll still be hopefully in his prime. But this is the best U.S. player, and he's not going to get to play in a World Cup. So it's a very unfortunate incident. And for the U.S. not to have done this, I mean, you couldn't get a draw against Trinidad and Tobago. Like, that's unacceptable. And
even then, wasn't that only going to be good enough to get the U.S. into a playoff with Australia, or were they going to automatically
get through? Draw would have gotten them into a playoff with Australia. And Australia's very dangerous. Like, that would have not – been a two-legged playoff, one in the United States, one in Australia. That would not have been an easy thing to do.
So even then it was – we're not even talking about where it would have been an automatic qualification. That
no,
would have just been
the
to get –
the win would have gotten them automatically qualified. The draw would have, I think, gotten them into that playoff with Australia. But either way, this is unacceptable. I mean, it's completely unacceptable for the United States. And you know, the rest of the world, yes, I'm sure a lot of them are getting a kick out of this and a good laugh out of it. But – soccer can only grow more if it gets bigger in the United States, because it's already the biggest sport everywhere else. So if soccer wants to get even more big and you know, have the potential to grow even more, it's going to be in the United States. And Fox right now, the network that paid a bunch of money to broadcast the World Cup, that's like a $200 million hit. Because the United States isn't going to be in it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'll still watch it. I always enjoy the World Cup. And, I mean, I've always enjoyed the World Cup, knowing that even if the U.S. is in it,
there's going
to
be good teams.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to probably get knocked out. I guess the last couple of times they've actually made it to the knockout stages. But I don't know. I mean, the guy, you know, you brought up the point about not making the Olympics the last two Olympic cycles. And that, what was the guy that was ranting and raving on ESPN?
Oh, Taylor Twellman.
Yeah. I mean, he brought that up, too, and I pointed it out. It's like, those are guys that, you know, are younger that eventually would work their way up the U.S. system and be a part of these World Cup teams. So if you're not even good enough to qualify for the Olympics, I mean, then it's going to just trickle down to, you know, the team that's trying for the World Cup qualification. So even moving on in the future, I mean, what are the prospects? Like, here's the thing about U.S. soccer. When it's, like, unacceptable that a country of 330 million people is no good at soccer, and some will point out, well, like, you know, our women have won three World Cups and lost in the final and the fourth. So what is it that they're doing that the men aren't?
Well, U.S. soccer on the women's side, the USA was really the first country to kind of put a lot into it, you know, and now even they're sort of getting caught up with some of these Western European nations, your Germany's, your England's, your France's, they're getting better.
Sure, you know, but the women did win the last one.
They did, and they're still the class of women's soccer, but it's because the United States was really the first country to put money into women's soccer, and they've been ahead of the curve. So I think that the men have a long way to go in terms of trying to get even close to what the women have done, but there's so many things infrastructurally that are wrong with what the men's side and what the youth development, you know, going all the way down to like little kids playing all the way up to where you become a professional. There's a lot wrong with it. I mean, Taylor Twellman hit the nail on the head that going to college does not benefit. Like between the ages of 15 and 19, those are your prime development years in soccer. And instead of preparing to go to college, you should be in a professional setting like all the people are in Europe. And well, that's how they
– there's no NCAA really men's soccer. I mean, it barely exists. Most schools don't even have it.
Oh, exactly. And that's the thing. But the ones that do, I mean, that's the thing. You're setting up to try to do that. In Europe, that system doesn't exist. I mean, you can, I guess, go to college and play soccer, but if you're doing that, you're not trying to be a professional.
No, those clubs start.
That's what I'm saying.
They
have their
systems.
Academies.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Barcelona has it, Real Madrid, all the Manchester United, all the big teams have their own academies, and that's kind of what needs to be looked at in terms of happening here. The system does not create these superstar players like it does in Europe. So.
Well, plus, I mean, kids now are – like, I read something not long ago that between the ages of 18 and 25, males between those ages are consuming either playing or watching esports more than they are.
Ugh, that's sad.
You know, physical sports.
That is very sad. But the last thing I'll say on this before we jump to the Falcons is that there is a pay-for-play system in place if you want to be a good soccer player and play at a club level in the United States. That doesn't exist in Europe. If you're good enough, they're going to put you on a team and maybe even pay you or you know, give you a scholarship to go to their academy or something. But for here, you got to pay for that. So, I mean, that's a big difference, and that system has to be looked at for sure. But just an extremely embarrassing moment. And Taylor Twellman said this in that rant you referred to. The most you know, the lowest point in U.S. soccer history.
Yeah. I mean, it's like no matter what structurally needs to be done to improve things, it still comes back to being, we still shouldn't have been losing to Trinidad and Tobago.
That's the bottom line. So. You should not have lost that game. All right, the Falcons, as we transition here, will take on the Miami Dolphins at Mercedes-Benz Stadium this weekend. The roof will not be open for any more Falcons games this season, by the way. They announced that the other day as the structure of the roof is an issue. The only time it'll be open this year is for Atlanta United's final home game on October 22nd when they take on Toronto FC. But outside of that, the roof will be closed. But that's inconsequential, really. It doesn't matter. A lot of people are mad about that for some reason. It's like, they'll get it fixed and it'll work at some point.
Well, they played in a dome before.
Exactly. So. Exactly. So it'll be 72 degrees and no wind.
Chick-fil-A will also still be closed.
It will be on Sunday. They do not operate on Sunday. But the Falcons should be getting Julio Jones back for this game. Mohamed Sanu probably not going to be back. Vic Beasley kind of up in the air onto if he can.
He's at least practicing.
Yeah, he's practicing again, and that's really good for Atlanta. But the opponent they're going up against, I mean, the Dolphins.
Watch your mouth.
I know you're a big Dolphins guy, but just watching Jay Cutler just run your franchise into the ground has got to be terrible, right?
The Dolphins have played four games and scored three offensive touchdowns.
Why aren't they starting Matt Moore? I mean, he actually looked somewhat decent when he would play for the Dolphins.
I agree. I don't know. I don't know why what their problem is with Matt Moore. There's also there's another free agent quarterback out there who 5 years ago was starting in a Super Bowl. but apparently he doesn't know the system or something.
That's right. He doesn't. It has nothing to do with his political activism.
Has nothing
activism.
To do with anything else. But no, there's so. But yeah. But anyway, they've gone with Jay Cutler, and I remember like the case was, well, Adam Gase was his offensive coordinator for 1 year in Chicago, so he might know Gase's system more. Three touchdowns in four games so far. Their pass defense ranks 31st. They haven't intercepted a pass yet. So in the last two games, Matt Ryan got intercepted five times by two excellent pass defenses. The Dolphins are a mess. They can't stop the pass. They can't score on offense. They've had a ridiculous early season schedule. They opened in L.A., played their second game in New York, their third game in London, their fourth game in Miami. Their fifth game will be in Atlanta. The Falcons, I mean, there's no reason they shouldn't just completely obliterate Miami Sunday.
Oh, absolutely. Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman should have big games. They should be able to run the ball pretty well. And Matt Ryan hopefully can get back to that MVP level of last season and not the level he played at against the Buffalo Bills, because that was a pretty horrible way to go about things.
Yeah, but the Bills do have a good pass defense.
He also didn't play great against the Lions.
Right, that's right. He's thrown five picks in the last two games, but again, the Dolphins don't have an interception yet, and they rank 31st. The only team worse than them, Atlanta will play next week, the Patriots, and pass defense efficiency. So, yeah, I think it completely sets up for Atlanta to get back on track and you know, come off the off week and get a win and still be in pretty good shape. Look, Atlanta still leads the NFL, which they did a year ago, too, when they darn near won the Super Bowl, and their yards per play differential. They're the only team that's in the top 10, both offensively and defensively in that. So it's been turnovers, really, that have kind of slowed the offense down. And, I mean, a couple of guys have been hurt. Ryan Schrader's another one that I think is on track to come back. But, you know, in that game against the Bills, when you lost Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu, it was, that clearly impacted the outcome of that game.
But even then, you still had a chance to win there at the end. You know, I mean, the Falcons were driving.
And had they had one of those, they might have. But without them, like, oh, look, suddenly Taylor Gabriel can't catch a pass.
Yeah, you're throwing to very tiny targets on the outside then within Nick Williams and Taylor Gabriel.
Sure. And again, the Bills do have a good defense. The Dolphins do not. And their offense appears to be horrible, too. They got shut out by the Saints.
Yeah, that was – I mean, granted, that game was in London, so you got to throw that out there. But still, that was – as a Dolphins fan, I'm sure you got up and watched, but it was a pretty terrible way to start your Sunday morning.
Well, when their opening drive, it was like 8.5 minutes long, and then it ended with Cutler throwing a pick in the end
zone. That sounds about right.
Yeah. But you know what? I believe he was standing during the national anthem. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So as long as he's doing that, he should be the Miami Dolphins quarterback, or at least Matt Moore.
I'm with you. I don't understand what the – because Matt Moore played last year, ended up playing the last three or four games of the regular season and started the playoff game. Yeah, I think he's better than Cutler.
That's not very hard, though.
But, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with him.
I love Jay Cutler going out in the Wildcat, though. And
just standing there?
Standing there. Although Adam Gase, I think, tried to cover for him. It was like he was actually supposed to act apathetic. I'm like, what?
Okay. Well, he's good at that.
Yeah, he certainly is good at that with the body language. So that'll wrap things up for this edition of the Crossover Podcast. Hoping the Dogs, TCB, take care of business against Missouri. And hopefully the Falcons get that win. And hopefully U.S. soccer gets their head on straight, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think two of those are definitely going to happen. That third one there, I don't know.
Yeah, that one might be a little harder.
That seems like a big – that's a tall order.
That's more of a long-term project than the other two.
And the next one's after Russia and Qatar, right, or Qatar?
2022 is Qatar, yes. So Russia 2018, Qatar 2022, and most likely USA, Mexico, Canada triple bid for 2020.
All right, because I was thinking like, well, you know, the U.S., I mean, this probably didn't want to go to Russia. But then after that, they probably don't want to go to Qatar either, so we might not be back in the World Cup for like 12 years or something.
Oh boy, let's not think about that. For Chris Brame, I'm Sam Franco. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to the Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.